Hello, gaming intelligentsia. Before we start today's podcast, here is a message from our sponsor. The Agamenex podcast is made possible with the support from our sponsors at Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. The Pragmatic Solutions player account management platform is an incredibly powerful technology stack for today's gaming business. Their modern, modular platform provides all the core services to power your business, and their SaaS licensing model allows you to reduce cost and accelerate your strategic goals. Enterprise technology with decades of operational know-how at scale built in. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo. And now, here is today's podcast.
Future trends, deep insights, industry leaders. This is the iGaming Next podcast with your host, Pierre Lind.
And welcome to the iGaming Next podcast. Pontus Lindvall, EBIT plus 55%, group revenue plus 31%, and active customers plus 46%. How happy is Pontus Lindvall on a scale of 1 to 10 today?
Yeah, I'm very happy. I'm satisfied with the quarter and the result in general. And actually, I'm really glad to see that finally we get some payoff for the hard work that we have done over the past 3 years or so.
Yeah, and it's interesting you start on that note, because it feels a little bit like the last couple of years, the iGaming industry has had a tough time in many areas, especially the Nordic focused operators. But recently, now especially this year, it feels like the tides are turning a little bit. Is there anything you can attribute that to, that the industry is now doing better?
I don't know. It seems that this industry swings back and forth, and we've been on a negative on the negative side for a while. I think one thing that has helped recently is the tragic fact, I would say, that COVID happened, and it turned out that this industry again was kind of resilient towards a hard time compared to many other industries, and that may have helped a bit to change the view on the industry.
Yeah, and it's something I spoke to with a friend of mine a while ago who mentioned the fact that, you know, the gaming industry has previously been resilient to downturns in the economy. You always made the argument that the iGaming industry is recession proof, but now investors seem to also look for industries that are pandemic proof. So you have the both of them, right? It's like what industries are pandemic proof and what industries are recession proof, and the iGaming industry is both.
Yeah, for sure. And we didn't know that 6 months ago. We didn't hardly know that there were any pandemics around, and that was a threat to certain industries. But now we know for sure. And I thought about it this morning. I mean, it's a borderline question. We are on the online side of the business, and we are doing quite well. And our, you know, colleagues and friends on the land-based side, they struggle a lot, and some of them are really in bad shape. And how could they know 6 months ago? So it's a really tough situation for them, and we have to judge ourselves being lucky by being in our position.
Yeah, that's for sure. I guess would you say as well as another reason why the industry is now doing better again is it seems that kind of before the locally regulated markets became a thing, especially in Northern Europe, some operators didn't have that good geographical spread, for example. And when the regulation in Sweden happened and other Northern European countries, that seem to have affected them, the bottom line in a lot of organizations. And would you say that these last couple of years, like the hard work that we have done kind of to increase the geographical spread and being able to deal with the local regulated markets and all the additional due diligence that it brings, is that also a key to why the numbers are now looking much better?
It's a complex question to answer, because, you know, on the one hand you can say that when regulation when local regulation comes to market, it comes with a tax burden and also compliance burden for to be able to follow regulations, and you need to take on more staff, and that that obviously, you know, calls for a higher level of market share in order to be able to sustain profits, etc. On the other hand, looking at the history, you don't want to be too big in any single market, because if the local regulation hits you really hard, then it's kind of, you know, taking the company down anyway. So from that regard, it's better to be spread out. And if you have a real bad hit in a market, it doesn't really affect the figures that hard, because you have so diversified revenue stream. So I think for us, it's, you know, it hasn't been a strategic move to have all those markets. It's rather that we have, for sure, we have been interested in many markets, and we have started to work in many markets, and we, where we find markets that work well, then we continue and invest more and we grow. And when we find markets that doesn't work at all, then we leave. But now it has turned out that we are quite happy to have a broad scale of markets.
Yeah, because that begs the question as well, looking at like Europe versus rest of the world. The fact that like operators like Betsson are now looking at emerging markets like Colombia now recently with your acquisition of Colbet, and now you're pushing into the US and these type of things. I mean, looking at the regulated market in Europe, some, you know, upcoming regulation in Germany, the continued stricter climate in the UK, other markets following suit in Europe. Like, yeah, how do you see the future of the European markets?
I think the general view within the industry on the European market is that some markets now tend to become overregulated, and that will hurt the markets. It will kind of actively push players outside of the regulation and into offshore operations. And I believe this is not done by purpose from the regulators. Rather, they will have some kind of learning curve, and sooner or later they will find out that you can't put too much restrictions on the offering to the client, or put too much efforts on the client, because then they will find other alternatives. But for the time being, these regulated markets in Europe looks a little bit challenging due to overregulation, and I think that is a reason for looking elsewhere with new establishments in, like you said, the US and South America and other places.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point you're making with the overregulation in Europe that we've seen obviously in some markets, because I remember a couple of years ago when you know, Sweden was about to be regulated, and the major operators were looking forward to the regulation. You know, now we'll have market stability, you know, consolidation of the operators there, more serious players, like channelization rates and all the things. But now, looking at the situation we are in now, would you say that Betsson are still would you still push for more regulated markets, locally regulated markets? Is that something you still look as a positive thing for the future of the industry?
I think whether they become regulated or not, it's not in our control. We just have to live with it. I think we will see regulation coming in more markets, and looking from figures that has been provided to us from external sources, we do think that locally regulated markets will not grow as fast in the coming 5 years as they did in the past 5 years. So that's one thing to take into consideration. In regards of the Swedish market, when we look at the regulation here, black on white, on paper, I think it's a good regulation. Actually, it allows for most products. It's a decent tax level, It's rather the implementation and the handling of the market that has been a little bit different from what we expected. The authority has been, you know, first of all, you have to say that the regulations is not 100% crystal clear. It's a frame regulatory framework, and the interpretation of that has been a little bit different from by the operators compared to the regulator, and that has led to some fines and some misunderstandings, and that's definitely not on purpose by the operators. The Swedish regulation we find quite nice, the regulation as such, but we are a little bit surprised by the hard interpretation by the authority.
Yeah, and I mean, this is hot potato right now, obviously, and in Sweden right now, I know that there are some rumors that there might be legal action against the state, basically challenging a lot of these decisions with these, like, you know, over the top fines for and also against the restrictions that they implemented now in the summer. That seems to have been kind of against what the that seems to have been based on false information. Is that something that Betsson stands behind, taking legal action, or how do you view that side?
We look at the cases as such, and if we think we have been treated in the wrong way, then we will overrule the decisions and hope to get them correctly judged. That is as far as we will go at this point of time.
Yeah, fair enough. And then on that note as well, with the restrictions that have been implemented now in the summer, the additional restrictions to protect the players, do you think that there is a chance that these will become permanent?
Of course, there's a risk for that. It has been stated that it should not. So if I would have to guess or put a bet on it, I would say that they will not be permanented.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's the big question, all right? And like you were saying, the government has been clear that these are temporary restrictions. But I know as well that there are some organizations that are preparing their budgets in that scenario should they be prolonged, basically. But is that something you guys are kind of lobbying against? Like, are you trying to prevent that from happening in some way, or are you working towards those restrictions being lifted?
I think we do that through the organization of BOOS, especially BOOS, and yep. potentially also Spear. Because the regulation, the limitations as such, was put into only a fraction of the market, so it's a little bit tilted. And for that reason, we of course want to get them removed, and we didn't think they were necessary in the first place.
They were based on a false premise, which was the fact that the casino revenue were increasing in Sweden, which it turned out it was not. And as you were mentioning, both BOS is obviously the Swedish industry organization, which is represented by Betsson and many other operators and gaming operators in Sweden to basically give the industry a voice specifically for these type of issues.
I think the whole thing behind those regulations were not based on facts. They were based on some kind of guess. And I actually checked our figures yesterday, the figures that we published this morning today, and the revenue per active user in the database is like more than 10% lower this quarter than the same quarter last year, and that shows that the spending per capita is actually going downwards, not upwards, as the minister indicated.
Yeah, exactly, and that is the basis of this potential legal action that will be taken against the state, which is the fact that it was based on a completely false premise, which then obviously has to have some form of repercussion. But we'll wait and see what is going to happen on that side. I want to ask you a little bit, Pontus, on the German side of things now. Germany also is becoming a regulated market, a locally regulated market, but in the meantime, they are now implementing this how would you say, like the temporary regulatory framework, and it was announced in a very short amount of time that you had to kind of do like a massive amount of different points to protect on the players again and to follow this like this temporary regulation. How do you guys see the interim regulation is called? Like how do you see this interim regulation in Germany, and do you have enough time to be compliant to when it comes into effect, which is in about a month time, I think?
It actually came into effect on the 15th of October, so that's...
It's already in effect, okay.
It's in effect, and it was announced on the 30th of September, yeah. Which gave us around 2 weeks to make the changes. And the problem is that the sites that we operate and those gaming sites, it's not like a thin homepage with a couple of graphical elements. These are more or less banking systems that cater for a lot of transactions and money, so it's very unfortunate that we were forced into making quite dramatic changes to those systems in 14 days, because when we do that, it comes with the risk for the customer at the end of the day, worst case. Now we have managed to change the majority of the requirements, and we did that on time, but we had to drop everything that we were working on in terms of new development and focus the company totally on this in order to make that happen. So on the question what I think about the German temporary regulations, I don't like the way they were implemented, because it was very hard for us to do that in that short time frame. In the long term, I think we will come out well at the other end of the tunnel, so to say, when the market is finally being regulated, which is in July next year. Mm-hmm. And we will see what happens then. There are further limitations that will have to be implemented until we come there.
Yeah. And I mean, this short amount of time to make these massive changes, I mean, you are a solid big organization with a lot of resources who can quickly, put your resources to make these changes. But if you are a smaller or medium operator, how would you ever be able to implement these changes in time? It's impossible, right?
Yes, it's very hard, and I think you just lean back and give up virtually and leave the market. And that's, when it becomes too complicated, then the channelization, the ratio of customers that are still inside the regulated environment will go down, and that's very unfortunate for the state, that they get less tax income, but even more so for the client itself, that they end up somewhere outside in a not controlled environment.
Yeah, of course. Before we start looking at the kind of more positive movements in the market, I just want to do a quick stop in the UK as well, because I saw that you released a press release the other day announcing that you will consolidate your, I think it's, you had something like 8 brands operating in the UK market previously, and you're consolidating that to one brand, Risk. UK market obviously also facing very tough regulation, and it's becoming more difficult to operate in that market. How do you see your future in that market, and why did you choose to consolidate the brands into only one? What is the upside with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. Actually, you said 8 brands. We stated 9 brands, but when we really calculated it, it turned out it was 10 brands. and the bets on we have around 3% of our revenues. We had 3% of our revenues from the UK, which is not really big. And it just turned out that we had so many brands and we had three different platforms, and that's not a result of a strategic decision. It's rather a result of acquisitions and things that has been going on that we have added on. And this kind of operational structure that we had took a lot of resources internally to work on three different platforms and keep them compliant, and all the other work that had to be done with the 10 brands. So that's not the optimal structure if you want to become profitable. So looking at that and the competitive situation in the UK, of course we could be compliant with 10 brands, but you know, the bottom line would not be very happy about that. So we see a lot of other opportunities elsewhere in the world, and we decided to let's stay there with one brand. The UK market is a very important and huge gaming market in Europe. We want to remain there, and we'll see how the market turns out in the future, but we don't want to keep on operating so many brands on that high cost level. It's just not sensible.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, other major operators have even chosen to exit the market completely, like Come On Group, VNB, and one of them, for example. Like, was that ever on the like on the discussion for you guys? Like, you still continue to push one brand, but how do you see?
Yeah, of course, we discussed if we should withdraw totally, but as I said, it's a large market in general, not for Betsson, and you never know what's happening in the future. We know that, you know, the trends swing back and forth, and now it's at one end of the spectra. It may turn back in the future, and then we want to be there in the market.
Yeah, fair enough. Just taking a step back now, Pontus, to the quarterly report itself that was released today. Like, I started this podcast saying, obviously, you released the podcast with amazing numbers. You know, you're trending towards an all-time high in terms of revenue for 2020. And still, the share price, even though it's jumped today at the release of the report, it's still lower than what it was 2 years ago, for example, when you had your previous all-time high. Would you say that the share price is undervalued at the moment?
Not the share price as such. We can just comment on the fact that this industry as a whole has been revalued by investors in a way, and some institutional investors, mainly in the Nordics, has chosen to leave this industry for ESG matters, and that has of course had an impact on the valuation. I think when you look at our numbers that we presented today, it shows we're quite a big company. We have quite a strong growth. We're a growth company. It's not many companies on the main top part of the Nasdaq list that shows that kind of growth, and we have a solid profitability and we give dividends, so we should be a nice investment alternative. But some institutional capital has chosen to leave, and now we see the influx of new other institutional investors with a different scope and different needs. So I think that is the reason for the share price being not as high as it was, especially not if you compare it to 2015, where this whole industry had some kind of peak in valuations. Yeah. But as a company, we are in a far better position today. Yeah. Companies much more technical advanced, we're bigger, the organization is better. So that's where we stand as a company, and maybe we get the value out of that someday.
Yeah, exactly. And the industry is more mature as well, I would say, too. You know, the outlook for the industry looks, I think, much better now than it has done before. And also leading back to this point that, you know, looking at like institutional investors are now looking at, you know, which industries are pandemic proof as well as recession proof, and the industry has a lot of good things going for it. You mentioned ESG, so I have a very basic understanding of what that means, because it has something to do with the kind of corporate responsibility program and things like that. Like, so it's a perception issue of the industry. I would imagine why the ESG, why this is working against the industry. Is there a way for us as an industry, as an agami industry, to turn this perception around that sometimes we have against us? That it's just the media perspective that you only see one side of.
Yes, and I think it's an important task that we work with that and try to explain more. Then again, there will be some investors that will not be open to invest in gaming companies, and I have full respect for that. It's everyone's choice where to invest, but if they walk away from gaming companies, they should do it for the right reasons. And this is where we had to educate this community, because this, what we do, we work with entertainment, it's betting, it's casino. We have a lot of clients. Most of them spend small amounts of money to entertain themselves, and gambling as such is accepted by the society in general everywhere. And it's also being conducted by the states itself through the state-owned monopolies. So this is a business which is well accepted. Then it has an issue, and that is that some players becomes problematic players, and it's a very little share of all the players that end up there. And this is, of course, unfortunate, and it's nothing that we benefit from as an industry. We want to have our customers long-term and to be long-term good and happy customers. So we have the same interest as everybody else to try to prevent this. And we have become a lot better over the years. And in the presentation I had this morning, I said that we have conducted 92,000 contacts with people for responsible gaming purpose during the quarter. That's quite a lot. And I've been in this industry for such a long time, and we started to work with this more than 15 years ago, but we have come a long way, and we have more to learn, and we will continue to work hard within this area. But it's important for us that we can explain to the investors that this is nothing that we want to hide. We want to discuss this. It is a problem for a very little minority of our customers, and we work every day to try to limit that risk. And if they just understood this, I think that they would have a little bit more positive view on the industry.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Pontus. I think that is where the industry needs to become better, is to educate and reach out with this information, because there are some like incredibly technological advancements that we as an industry are leading when it comes to player protection and KYC procedures and so forth, to be able to know every single customer, what their habits are, what they can afford to spend, and so forth. And the industry is really innovative in that regard, and doing a really, really good work that can then spill over to other industries as well. So I think there's a lot of other tech industries that can learn from gaming in the innovation that is happening in this space at the moment. And the point is that, like you were saying, Pontus, the responsible organizations, the ones that like yourself, who are fully compliant in the local regulated markets, who are pursuing doing the right thing, absolutely have the right intention to offer this as an entertainment, as a form of entertainment, rather than what the perception can be sometimes when you only look at the media report, which is just negativity. I mean, I've been in industry for a long time as well, Pontus, and we've gone through the poker boom that happened in like the early 2000s. I mean, then every man and his dog were playing poker, and clearly that was accepted in society back then, because it was so much more widespread, if it can be accepted, then I think that the industry has a chance to improve the perception again.
Yeah, I'm sure it has, and we will work on that. And it's in the interest of all organizations that is related to this industry.
Yeah, that's for sure. So I have a question from a friend of mine, actually, who has been in contact with you before. Thomas Wilbs is his name. And he's asking, it's quite an interesting question, I thought, based on the quarterly report. He's asking, what would the top line be if you corona neutralized the numbers for this year? How big of an effect has corona has on the business, positive or negative?
If definitely if corona didn't happen, we would be on a lower revenue for the third quarter. That's at least my guess. This industry of online gaming got a nice push by the unfortunate corona pandemic and the lockdown, where some gaming locations had to be shut down, etc. And naturally, some of the players that used to play offline were pushed to the online environment. And what we see now, when some of the offline gaming sites has opened up again, it seems that some of the players decided to stay online. Maybe they found a new product that they like a lot. So I think we established a new level, so to say, in the past 6 months.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see if we look at the market share between online and offline. I think online gambling right now is accounting for something like 23% of the total gambling market versus in person. And it will be interesting now with the digitization of the industry that is taking place right now, the digitization of the world, how much market share is online going to take from land-based?
Yeah, that's really interesting, and we just have to wait and see. But I'm sure that we, not only for internet gaming, but for many industries, I'm sure that this has kind of, you know, pushed further, accelerated the digitalization of many businesses.
That's for sure. So a last topic of today, Pontus, if you don't mind, I just want to go over to the US again, which is on everyone's mind right now. Obviously, you have a license in Colorado, you are pushing your proprietary sports book there. You mentioned in your investor call today that you don't expect Betsson to do a massive marketing push into the US market, so it shouldn't affect the EBIT for next year too much. Looking at US as a market, which is like the most difficult market to penetrate in the world, the most expensive market to penetrate and so forth, how does those two statements go together? How will you capitalize on the US market without a big marketing push behind it?
Yeah, that's a big secret that we have.
That's a big secret.
First of all, we haven't received any license in Colorado yet. We're in the process of application, but we're on the move at least. As you said, it's a big market and it's expensive to go in there. Betsson has chosen to mainly have a business-to-business route into that market, which means that we will supply other organizations with our technology and possibly operational skills, and these other organizations will build their brands and build up their market presence there. And then you can ask, and why do we then open up business to consumer in Colorado, which is not the biggest state in the US? And that is for us to be relevant to other operators. We believe that we must have some kind of shop window where people can see and test our products. And we have a great strong belief in our product when it's adopted for the US market. So we believe that will be a nice way of showing off what we have to offer to other operators. And that is also the reason for my comment on the quarterly report this morning, that we are not really there to conquer the market with our own cash box. We are there to present ourselves in Colorado and build up. Mm-hmm. And yes, we will market, and yes, we will build a nice operation there, but we will not, you know, overinvest and kind of try to take the whole US market. And that is why I wanted to convey the information that we will not, you know, have a massive negative impact on the EBIT by going into the US.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting topic in general, and it's worth its own podcast, I think, of another hour for that market. But just as a final point on that, just to solidify how big confidence the investors have in that market right now. So William Hill were recently acquired by Caesars Entertainment at a valuation of £2.9 billion. Pound, and their latest quarterly report, they had an earnings of something like £555 million pound in revenue. At the same time, DraftKings in the US had revenues in the last quarter of $130 million, and valued on the stock market at $16 billion. And this is in a market that has no track record. It's completely anyone's guess what's going to happen, but that's how massively the investors believe in that market. So do you feel that as well? Do you agree with that type of belief in the US market? And what's your thoughts on the future? Like, will it be so important, that market, that you have to capitalize now, or will you be able to penetrate later?
I think no market is closed or static, so there will always happen things. You can enter that market at a later stage. You don't need to be first there. We believe our way of entering is a smart way of doing it, without doing, you know, trial and error with a lot of money. There are investigations about market size and estimates, and they all show that the US will be a big market in the future. So in that way, you can say that the market is right, that values the operators over there to a high premium. But then again, it's about succeeding as well, and there are several competitors, and let's see who will be strong. There are a couple of them who are strong today, but I don't think that picture is static either. There will be competition, and we will see other strong players showing up as well.
Yeah, that is that's a good way of ending today, I think. So Betsson is taking the Apple approach with the US market. You don't have to be first, but as long as you do it right.
Exactly.
I think that's a good way to end today. Pontus, thank you. Thanks a lot for coming on today. I mean, again, congratulations to the quarterly report. It makes me really happy to see as well. I have my own old Betsson roots as well. So been around and been following you guys for a long time. So always a pleasure to talk to you. And do you have any final words that you'd like to mention?
No, thanks for discussing. It's interesting, and as you said, let's have a separate topic on the US one day.
Yeah, I would love to. Pontus, in the meantime, I wish you a good weekend and a good day, and I hope to see you soon. Thank you so much.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This fruitful discussion has been brought to you by our sponsors, Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. Is your business struggling to keep up with the development demands on your current gaming platform? Well, then it's time to upgrade to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Multi-tenant, multi-currency, multi-regional, API-based, rule engine automated, regulation ready, it's all here out of the box. Smart businesses leverage Pragmatic SaaS model and license powerful modern technology for a fraction of the cost of in-house development. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo. Stay safe and take care.